Pre-recorded from Joe's mom's basement, it's the first rewind episode of the 2017 version of the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey everyone, I'm Griffin the intern, but as the ladies in my fourth period call me, the Fintern. You'll find that this version of the rewind show is way different. The guys are out doing research. Someone told them in a letter they should learn to see the big picture, so they're on their way to the museum to find the biggest picture in the place. Yeah, you've seen people like Joe and OG before, but if you have, you probably had to pay admission. Anywho, I came down here to the basement assuming they both want me to clean up, and good news for both of us. Apparently Joe's mom cracked down in the basement after the New Year's Eve party. This place is cleaner than a hospital. Man, I'm glad I'm not on her bad side like her neighbor Doug is. She even loaded up Stacking Benjamin's episode 277 for us to play for you today. Ethan Block, creator of the popular Digit app, made a basement visit to dispel some money myths. They sound good when you hear them, but when Ethan tells you his thoughts, maybe you'll change your mind. The guys also tackle a listener question about Roth IRA contributions now that they're over the income limit. Do they have to take the money out? There's also Doug's trivia, Joe and OG going over the headlines, and much more. And remember to just purge anything you hear about the investments or giveaways from your mind. This episode was originally released on Tuesday, December 1st, 2015. Fintern out.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime!
Live from Joe's parents' basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show! This week we're talking investing and saving. On today's show, from savings app Digit, Ethan Block. Two listener questions about retirement savings. And an epic and literary trivia question, which will show you how erudite and aloof I am. And here they are, two guys who are the 50 Shades of Grey of financial podcasting, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
I'm not the one with the balled up sock in my mouth the whole time.
No, but how many times I've thought that, and not in a 50 Shades of Grey kind of way, but I'm like, man, if somebody'd stick a sock in his mouth, this show'd be so much better.
I'm saying that that's you.
It is not.
That's you. Like, here, just gag on these for a few minutes.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of Earning,
like,
Saving, Spending.
Mask with just a hole in it.
With a plan. Holy cow. Oh, it is a rough Wednesday open. Man.
People, I mean, like, a friend of mine was telling me about that. I don't know anything about that personally. I'm just...
You can neither confirm nor deny. Yeah. Welcome to Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to December, OG. We're rocking the December episodes.
Greatest month of the year.
We've got Ethan Block, Digit app. Everybody's talking about this new app, Digit. What's it all about? We'll talk to him at the end of the interview about what it's about. But he wrote this awesome article with some advice that is like that, you know, what did one mentor of mine say once? There's the short-term and obvious solution, or there's the long-term and not-so-obvious solution. And Ethan's article was all about some of the long-term and not-so-obvious solutions. So happy to have Ethan on the show. And, man, we got some great letters today. But the letter I love the most is the letter we talked about last week telling us just how much money that Justin saved when he went to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. In fact, you could save money one of three ways there. If you've got student loans, save a bunch of money on your student loans, save a bunch of money on refinancing that debt into a personal loan, or save money by refinancing your house, or when you go to buy a new house. Now, you got to have a high credit score, but if you're that person that's been responsible with your money, and part of being responsible is listening to the Stacking Benjamins podcast, well, of course, you're going to head to stackingbenjamins.com/SOFI. And I'll tell you why. Because if you've gone to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money, you'll know that Nick, Aaron, Brian, and the team over there, OG, they list SoFi as number one for people with high credit score. And you know what? Whether it's your debt product, your checking account, or your savings account, this is the time of the year to plan. So get your act together with your checking account first. Look up based on what you need in a checking account at Magnify Money. Really easy to do, by the way. Look up what the best one is. Go for that one. Then find an online savings account to save your emergency fund out of sight, out of mind, right? And then refinance your debt so that you can pay it down more quickly. Go into 2016 with a game plan. StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money, the place to start for that game plan. By the way, something a friend of mine the other day over the holidays, I was talking to my friend Mike, and I was showing him the cool app that you can use to listen to the Stacking Benjamin show. And you know what? He's like, how come I've been listening to the show forever and I never hear about the app? I'm like, oh, that's a good point, I thought. And so let's talk just a little bit about the app. If you're going to download Green Room episodes, you do those through the app. But even if you're not going to download the Green Room episodes, I love how easy it is to listen to the show on the Stacking Benjamins app. So there's two Stacking Benjamins app. We're trying to get the one with the blog pulled. We haven't updated it. The developer, we had a struggle with that one. But I'll tell you what, the podcast app, Stacking Benjamins podcast app, fantastic. Head to wherever you find your apps, either in the Google Play Store or at the iTunes App Store. All right. Enough about stores and debt and stuff. Man, we've got stuff. We've got great stuff. Ethan Block coming down talking about great advice to help you save money. But first, we've got some awesome headlines.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamins headlines.
Love both of these headlines, OG, because I think cover areas that we don't get to talk about a lot. First one is by Mark Schaff and comes to us via Investment News. SEC Chairwoman White says agency is, quote, full out working on fiduciary rule. A primary reason for the slow pace is that the SEC wants to avoid unintended consequences and, quote, get it right, the chief regulator says. You know, this headline, I think, would go by a lot of people, the fiduciary rule and getting the fiduciary rule right. But I think it's important because people don't understand that, OG. When you start splitting hairs between what's a financial advisor and what's a broker, what's fiduciary mean? Because that's at the heart of the rule.
Well, the biggest difference is that a fiduciary has a responsibility to act in your best interest. A broker has a responsibility to act and help you with something that's suitable. And there are two different, not even different sides of the same coin. They're just two different things. Having somebody that acts in your best interest is different than having somebody that provides you with products or services that are suitable.
Yeah, both of them. A fiduciary, it still is going to be suitable, right? Because it's in your best interest. But something can be suitable and not in your best interest.
I've got a great example of this. I mean, just a really simple one here. We talk sometimes about non-traded real estate, right? REITs we'll talk about on occasion. And the suitability for a non-traded real estate investment trust for a REIT is somebody under the age of 80. So you could say to a 79-year-old widow, let's say this person comes to you and she has $60,000 to her name. That's the entire summation of her portfolio. A suitable investment is a real estate investment trust for no more than $20,000. Well, we've talked about this a lot of times. Real estate's illiquid. She can never touch the money. She's probably going to be on the other side of the ground, so to speak. If she's 79, by the time this thing turns into something that is liquid, that's a suitable investment. It's certainly probably not in her best interest.
Holy, she's going to be on the other side of the ground, so to speak. You know, lady, you're going to be dead soon. Might not be the investment for you.
Not even dead soon. She could be dead in 15 years and still not be the greatest investment. We know real estate investment trusts right. that have been locked right. up for 10, 15 years.
No.
So that's a suitable investment. There's nothing illegal about that investment at that moment. The problem is, of course, is that it's probably not in her best interest to put a third of her portfolio someplace where she can't touch it for the next 15 years.
Great question to ask your financial advisor, I think, OG, is that one. Are you a fiduciary, right?
Well, and the answer will shock you, especially if the answer is, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. That's all the answer you probably need. Hey, our next headline comes from MarketWatch.com. This is another one, OG, that I really want you to explain because it's one that I think that we can really draw some corollaries because initially you have to stick with me here. Bill Gurley, who's a venture capitalist in this article, talks about the relative ease with which investors are willing to accept companies with big losses in Silicon Valley. A lot of talk lately about the app boom, right? And all of these new technologies coming out and about how people increasingly are throwing money at them. In fact, you see some of the top venture capitalists saying that they can't get their hands on a good deal because so many people want the good deal that the founders are jacking rates up again. In some ways, it's like 1999 all over again to a certain certain group of people. But this headline says, Bill Gurley, quote, "We become comfortable with high burn rates." It's funny because I don't really want to talk about the tech boom happening in Silicon Valley and whether we think that that's something that is a bubble or not. Don't want to talk about that. But I think whenever you start talking about any aggressive investment, you have to be willing to do what Gurley says here, which is we have to accept in our head a certain level of risk or we shouldn't be doing it.
There's nothing wrong with having a swing for the fence type of idea, whether it's an investment or a business opportunity or something like that. But you have to understand what the implications are short run and long run, right? It could be a fantastic outcome that is a huge moneymaker multiplier. You just invented the next Google or help support or whatever the case may be, or it could fall flat on its face and you lose everything.
You talk about, you know, keeping a long-term approach, OG, but it seems like the more risk that you're going to take with your investments, the more you have to think tactically, right? You got to start taking some bets.
Well, I think that if you're going to do, first of all, this would only be if you had all of your financial goals accomplished or on track to be accomplished, right? So we would call this maybe fund money or surplus money or something. So you're sitting down, you're doing your financial plan. You go, well, I needed to have at this point in my life, $500,000 to be on track for my goal. I'm at 600,000 and I'm making the conscious decision that I don't want to stay on this path because the path of overfunding my goal means that I'm going to hit it earlier and maybe retire sooner or something, perhaps. Instead, I want to take a piece of that and I'm going to really just go for it. And this will be my, boy, if I can hit a home run with this, then I really get to make leaps forward. But if I don't, that's okay too. I'm still on track for my other goals.
And even play money doesn't mean that you just throw money. I mean, at that point it's play money, but even when you go to Vegas, you want to win, right? I mean, we've talked about you and DraftKings. I mean, when you play DraftKings, you want to win. And if you want to win, you still got to do your homework.
Yes. I have a play money account, but it's full of blue chip stocks.
Is it really?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Great dividends. And I look for like high dividend value companies, right? So I've got all these blue chip companies in there and I get excited. Like, it's dividend day. I'm buying more American Express today. Woo.
That's funny because I keep buying.
That's my play money account.
In my play money account, I keep buying up oil, man. At some point, oil's got to come back. And I still think I'm really early to the game. But you know what? When that baby comes around, I am laughing. But I think that's the big point. And what's funny also is that what Gurley's saying in this article is he said, we become comfortable with high burn rates, which might not be a good thing, right? I think you do. If you're going to jump in the water when it comes to really risky investments, I don't think you can look at the last like 6 months. Like in this case in Silicon Valley, he's saying, listen, we become comfortable with these companies going through huge amounts of money for no real return. And is that really good?
I was going to say the other thing that you could look at too is supporting lots of different companies. What's the name of the website that we have had on to do IPOs? And
Loyal3.
Loyal3, right? So use a company like that where you can diversify your highly aggressive, risky things.
Yeah.
Or go on Prosper and only fund the E-rated
loans. Right.
Right. You know, those come with high returns, you know?
Yeah, that's when we had Simon Cunningham on talking about that. Good stuff. Well, we'll link to both of those in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. I think the big lesson, and I think there's two here, OG. The first one is ask your advisor if you're going to work with advisors, if they're a fiduciary. And then number two is if you're going to have an aggressive portfolio, that's fine. Still got to do your homework. Was making the rounds when Digit first came out. We actually missed having him on the show. We were in the middle of a whole different group of topics, so we couldn't get him. And every other podcast out there had Ethan on. So I'm sure everybody had already heard of Digit. Of course, Digit is the app, makes it really easy to save money. And we'll obviously talk to Ethan, I'm sure, more about that after he comes down the stairs here. But I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk to Ethan because he wrote this excellent article, OG. And I really, really want to talk about it. We'll link to the article, of course, in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. But as you know, there are things that are important for people to know, and they're not always the soundbite things, right? Politicians are getting this. We're seeing it all the time, not just on the debates, but in the media. A lot of people can say things that sound really good, But Ethan Block's a guy who likes talking about maybe we need to look beyond the soundbite. Here he comes, Ethan Block, down to the basement. And the founder of Digit, Ethan Block, joins us in the basement. Welcome, man.
Thanks for having me. It's really comfortable down here.
Yeah, we got the heat on and everything today. Mom must really like you. I wanted to ask you about this because Suzanne Woolley wrote this article that you were the subject of in Bloomberg Business, and it's the five biggest myths about saving money according to a millennial. And I got to tell you, you have me at hello here, Ethan, because your very first sentence was, just have your effing latte. And as a guy who never understood the latte factor in the first place, I totally agree with your sentiment there. But what was your point?
For me, it's, you know, people say you should spend this time to be conscious and think about buying that coffee. You only have so much time in the day, right? We all have 24 hours, no matter how rich you are. And spending 5 minutes or 10 minutes thinking through that decision is 5 or 10 minutes you'll never get back. And that could probably be put to a more productive use than the $3.50 that will cost you to get that coffee. Oh, and by the way, they also have a bunch of research that shows coffee drinkers are more productive. They have lower credit scores. I don't know if it's causation, but it's certainly correlated.
Oh, you mean they have higher credit scores?
Higher credit scores, excuse me. Yes.
Yeah, no, but that's amazing. Just like I saw people that drink a glass of wine, it's like going to the gym for an hour. So I just skip the gym and just drink wine.
I am on that plan also. The other thing for me, it's 2015, right? If we need to spend the time to think about buying a coffee, I just feel like something's broken in that system. Something's not working for our benefit as a human living in the year 2015 in an industrialized country. Well, that's maybe too philosophical, but I just feel like it's focusing on the wrong thing.
No, I think that you're right there, because there's this great quote that I like back from the 1990s where a CEO said, you can't shrink your way to greatness.
That's right.
And you certainly can't latte your way to greatness.
Exactly right. You certainly can't non-latte your way to greatness.
Well, you're a guy who lost money day trading, right? Now you're building a powerful business. So I think I got to ask you this. Should 20-somethings then, should they just invest in themselves kind of like you did in their 20s and leave saving actual money for later?
Yes and no, I would say. You know, I would definitely think if you're in your 20s, the most impactful thing you could spend your time on is thinking about what gives you meaning in your work. And if you're someone who likes the nice things in life and luxuries in life, and not everyone is, then you should be spending, if that's something you want throughout the rest of your life, then you should be spending your time on working on your earning potential or your earnings power. And how do you improve your earnings power over the course of your life? And the X number of dollars you might not save because instead you're spending time increasing your earnings power, that earnings power is going to compound over the course of your life way better than the few dollars you would save here and there in your 20s.
Is it when you talk about meaning and then you transition into earning power, does that mean that if you find a job that you love, you know, people talk about passion. Sometimes they think passion's a little overblown. You find something that you're passionate about that will pay? Like, what's that secret sauce?
I mean, for each person, it's different. You know, I believe we all have something inside of us that gives us joy to do or meaning. Sometimes it's just a hobby. Sometimes it's a profession. And so if it's just a hobby, be true to that and find something that's a profession that you can live with that can help finance your hobby. There's a guy on my team at Digit. He works on the support team and he's a fly fisherman first and foremost in his life. And he loves fly fishing and he works at Digit because he loves the gig. He loves Digit, but it's a way to finance his true passion. And that's life. Like, that's how it should be. Now, other people, their profession itself, myself included, can be that thing. But not every profession is like that, right? And you got to be true about that. And you got to treat it like that. But I think finding the things in your life that give you meaning, at the end of the day, and I'm only 30, right? So what do I know? I take a lot of this from Viktor Frankl. But at the end of the day, that is what we'll look back on and be like, my life was well lived.
No, you find that when you talk to older people that are disillusioned in their 50s, right?
Yeah, exactly. You never talk to one of them, right? You never talk to someone who's older. Maybe even in their 60s, right? And they're like, you know, that one time I was on that beach, oh, that was just sitting on that beach and reading a book. That really showed me what life was about. You never hear that. You talk to them and they're like, that time, You know, I had this parent pass away. Job was super difficult. Like, I was getting kicked in the face, and I rose to it and met the challenge and grew as a person. That will I'll never forget, and that made me who I am today.
What was your story? Because you seem like a guy that's been an entrepreneur since birth.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know what an entrepreneur was growing up. I didn't even understand the word, really, and didn't even identify with it. I just thought I was someone who did projects and liked to do them on my own. And it's been true for me. You know, it's a gift and it's a curse, I think.
Let's talk about some of the other myths that you dispel here. Credit cards were your next one on the list. The cliched advice says getting a credit card right out of school is dangerous. You say that advice is probably wrong.
Not having a credit score is dangerous. Even when you get a cell phone, they do a credit check, you know? And life is a lot more expensive if you don't have a credit score. And so my thinking here is, you know, don't get a credit card with thousands of dollars. My first credit card had a $300 limit. And it was helpful to have that limit because I can max it out. In the worst case, it's $300, even at 30% interest for some months isn't going to end my day-to-day sort of happiness or life or ability to live. But to have that and be building the credit, be paying it back responsibly if you can, I think is really valuable. After 2008, when they passed all this legislation that basically took credit card companies out of the colleges where they would canvass and try to sign people up, the number of people within that age range that had credit cards dropped tremendously, like almost non-existent. Like almost no one is lending to people in their early 20s now.
Was it also people stopped applying because they didn't want to touch that stove?
I would say it's both, but you know how that works. I mean, no one's marketing, the growth stops.
Right.
And the reality is credit is the thing that makes the world go round today. And so to not have firsthand experience dealing with it, I think is setting people up for failure.
But I think part of that firsthand experience is you've seen how much leverage has just burned people. Well, talk about 2008, right? I mean, people just got buried because they were leveraged. So I guess we got to talk about how do you see people using leverage responsibly to get ahead versus all the people that got just smoked?
Yeah. So here's where I may be a bit more cynical and cynical in the sense I'm a pretty big cynic when it comes to the human race and the brain and what we know about ourselves. It is actually, I feel it's the fault of the accountants and it's the fault of the banks to give credit that they were giving to the people that were getting it. Those people should be taken out back and shot, because if you're going to just give someone out of college, you know, hey, let's finance this house. What do you do for a job? I don't know. I'm still unemployed. Great. Perfect. We can get you a loan. Right. Or let's get you a credit card with $3,000-$5,000 limit. See, this is irresponsible lending and you're setting people up for irresponsible behavior. We're animals, and the incentive structure greatly influences how we live our lives. And you need to design systems with the knowledge we now have about how the brain works and about how behavior works and how incentives work. And people don't do that because they can make a lot of money in the short run taking advantage of the system.
But I love this quote that you have in the piece, too, which says, don't use credit cards to finance short-term experiences, right?
I mean, that's right.
I think that's probably the biggest point of all.
That's exactly right. If you need to use credit cards to do that, you need to think about, is that really an experience you need right now? Because it's not just going to cost you this $1,000 to go on this trip. It's going to cost you a lot more than that once you incorporate interest and once you incorporate the mental anguish of waking up every day and knowing you have that debt.
The next piece of advice, another myth that you just smell. Did I say the another?
Smells good.
Yeah, that's right. Well, this one doesn't. This one smells awful. It's the American dream involves buying a house. You say buying a house, Ethan, not really that important for a millennial.
Well, I think this comes back again to what gives you meaning. I'm speaking from my own experience, but there's the default cookie cutter existence in this country is once you grow up, you buy a house. And I think that should be questioned. Not everyone wants to be a homeowner. And buying a house in a lot of different areas actually can be more expensive than just renting, mostly urban areas. And so I think this, again, is something to not just take as the wisdom of a past generation, but to question it and say, do I really need to own a house right now? Do I really want to? Oh, yeah, it's something that gives me meaning. Okay, let's figure out how to make this work. Well, you know what? Renting's nice. When something breaks, I just call my landlord and he fixes it. Roof has a problem, I call my landlord. I'm not on the hook for any of that stuff.
Well, the great thing about being a millennial is that you're not tied down yet, right? I mean, for a lot of people, some are, but you say to use that flexibility to your advantage.
Unattached time. You'll never get it back.
Yeah, that's
ever.
That's powerful stuff. Once you graduate, immediately try to build up an emergency fund. You're not a big emergency fund guy, Ethan.
Well, I am. Yeah. I mean, me personally, I don't know if people should do what I do. But this is just a lot of emphasis on that. And my thing is you can get a little bit scrappier with your emergency fund.
I feel like people just don't spend enough time, you know, just talking to you right now. It feels to me like what you're saying is most people don't spend enough time examining themselves and examining their behavior. They just want somebody to tell them what to do.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm there. I agree.
I mean,
at times we want to examine ourselves, but in every facet and area of our life, finance is something that doesn't come natural to most people. So to ask them to become naturals is, I think, to do us all an injustice.
Why do so few millennials invest money? You see all these statistics, Ethan, that so few millennials are saving any money into the stock market, especially. It seems like the stock market would be a place to put at least a little money.
We got to remember, I mean, if you're in your late 20s, mid 20s, early 20s, it's a time right now to graduate.
Right.
I graduated in 2008, maybe one of the worst times, right? The whole world was melting, according to the newspapers. There's not a lot of jobs there. And then the jobs that are there are hyper competitive because there's lots and lots of high skilled labor in a lot of these jobs, all graduating, all looking for what to do. And I think it's a hard time right now, maybe one of the hardest to, again, if you're in your early 20s, to make a lot and to be saving. And then on top of that, to be paying down your student debt. On top of that, paying off your credit card if you have one. And then on top of that, investing. The average student loan is what, like 60 grand?
Right.
And this is 45, 50% of the millennial generation has a student loan. I mean, if they're paying down their student loan, that's a guaranteed 8% return. They shouldn't be putting any of that money in the stock market. Pay off the loan.
Yeah, that's so funny. Once again, coming back to doing the math yourself instead of just taking the rote approach. Did you ever think about working for the man, even though times were bad then? Did you ever think about?
Absolutely. I had to do whatever I needed to do to make money and survive. And when I graduated school, I was actually interviewing. And if you want to say the man, I was interviewing for a state job in California to work for the Public Utilities Commission.
Wow.
Would have worked in like managing like reservoirs and water facilities.
Working in water facilities versus doing what you're doing now. I mean, that's night and day.
Yeah. This is my temperament though, right? Which is you should do whatever, like no job is below you. For me, no job. As long as I can be my own man, be my own person. No jobs below. And people, I think sometimes people get beyond that and they think jobs are below them. And that's a mistake. You don't deserve anything. I don't know. That was my perspective when I graduated school instilled in me by my parents. It's helpful.
Having that perspective where nobody owes you anything and then you've got to prove yourself all the time, I think is a far healthier approach, right? Because then it's personal accountability instead of hoping somebody gives you something.
That's right. That's right. Entitlement is a disease.
Yeah. When it comes to Digit, how did you come up with Digit? Because for a guy that, has not been a big emergency fund guy, you're helping a ton of people build an emergency fund, you know, a few dollars at a time.
Yeah, it's not, you know, for me, it's not, Digit's not about the emergency fund as much as it's about automating a rote task that everyone needs to do in their lives today. And that can be done very well by a machine. And that is setting money aside today that you don't need. For me, that's like the exciting piece of it. And that's sort of the science fiction nature of it, of where we can go as a civilization if we can offload a lot of the arduous financial tasks in our lives to a machine. There's self-driving cars, right? That's right. Another, think about the number of people that are injured or die due to car accidents. And they still will exist after self-driving cars, but there'll be a lot less error. Drunk driving will almost hopefully be eradicated. If we're going to have self-driving cars, we should have self-driving finances.
Yeah, it seems like self-driving finances are way easier than self-driving cars.
Agreed. That's what I've been telling people. I mean, think about this. We have drones that fly halfway around the world and kill people. Like, what the frick? You know what I mean? Yet, I just got overdrafted yesterday because it wasn't enough in my checking account, even though the bank knows I have all this other money.
Oh, that would make me scream. Just right? Absolutely scream.
Like, there is a huge breakdown there in access to technology.
When did the idea for Digit come around, though? Do you remember where you were and what you were thinking when you went, crap, I got this great idea?
With Digit, there was no aha moment on the sort of tactic of how Digit works.
Yeah.
That was a long journey. There was an aha moment in January or February 2012 where I got to this idea that we all know finance could be better, but I got to this idea of like, okay, it could be a lot better if we could have something, some sidekick that could do a lot of the work for us that would both get it done and improve financial health for people and not require them to spend any time doing it. And that sort of vector was what I thought was I just needed to bring into the world, and eventually led a year and a half or so later to a very early version of what became Digit.
You know, it's weird when you start saying to yourself, how come this doesn't exist now, right? Because at some point you had to start saying that. How come somebody hasn't made this already?
For sure. I wouldn't do it if it was done. Right, I'd be happy. I'd be like, great. Someone's looking out for people.
Thank goodness.
Exactly. I'd go find something else probably in finance to do.
No, you become a water control specialist.
Sure, right. That's it. Get it
done. Well, let's talk about Digit, because I've mentioned it a few times. I introduced you as the founder of what may be the hottest fintech product out right now.
It's very kind of you to say.
Well, I certainly read about it as much, if not more, than most products. But tell everybody what it is, because we have not done that proper introduction yet, Ethan. What's Digit all about? What's it do for people?
So Digit's a service that will completely automate your savings for you. You sign up and connect your existing checking account. And then every single day, Digit will try and find the perfect amount of money to set aside. It will learn your spending and income patterns automatically. You don't classify any transactions. You just connect your checking account and you're done. You can go back to living your life, and Digit will set that money aside. Usually it's $12 every few days is the average right now, but the average is misleading. It can be, you know, as low as 10 cents and as high as $100 if it thinks it's a smart decision. And then you as a user, you can get that money back whenever you want by just telling Digit, hey, I want to make a withdrawal. While the money is in Digit, it's held as cash in an FDIC insured account. And so it's all very straightforward. And
it's a free app, right?
That's right. It's completely free. The basic service of Digit saving for you is completely free. And if you leave money in Digit for sort of 3 months at a time, you'll get a bonus, which gives you some incentive to kind of leave the money aside versus maybe spending it.
That's cool. A couple of questions I have for you about Digit. How does the algorithm work about the amount of money that it takes out? Because I know that self-employed people often worry, and I'm sure you've heard this a ton of times, Ethan.
For sure.
What if they take out more than I really want, right? I don't want that overdraft thing to happen.
Yep. Yeah, a couple of things. You know, we've designed a number of algorithms for folks that have irregular income. So if they're self-employed and they're doing draws, or they're self-employed and they get paid in an unusual cadence, Digit can sort of wrap around that and mold to that. And then in the event Digit actually ever did overdraft you for one reason or another, we'll reimburse that fee, 100% of that fee. It does happen very rarely. I think it's around 5 basis points. So 0.05% of all of our transfers might result today in an overdraft, which means 99.95% are successful.
Yeah.
And we'll get that. We have an ongoing joke. We're going to get it to like 6.9. So it's 99.9999. We'll never get rid of all of them. And again, if Digit does overdraft you, we'll reimburse you.
But once again, the fear that people have is that you're going to have money taken out of your hands right now, when in fact, the thing that people keep telling you is just get the money out of your hands and get it saved, and you will never need it. I mean, you're proving that.
That's right. I mean, we've saved $45 million in about 8 months, 9 months since launch. And we're just getting started. Like we're just getting started still.
That's exciting. And another question I had, because I found this other argument about Digit. I'm trying to give you all the negatives about your
product.
Yeah. But I saw this argument that Digit stunk because it wasn't paying interest, which I found kind of funny, because the behavior of savings is far more important by far than the 0.01 that bricks and mortar are giving you at the bank, right?
Absolutely.
But at that time, I was surprised to read you saying that you wanted to at some point try to pay interest. Where has that headed?
Yeah, so we ended up doing an extension to the product called Plus, which is something that rewards you for saving money in every 3 months. And it's not interest, but it's something we think is better, even in the rate environment we're in, which is depressingly low for interest rates. It's still something that we can give back to users for hitting the 3-month savings goal that we feel really good about. But you're right. You know, for the most part, if saving by itself, if you haven't saved, the interest component is completely irrelevant. And for the majority of this country, people don't have savings. And so the interest argument is one that comes from people that have money, that are, they're completely out of touch with most of this country. And so they see Digit and they go, oh, you don't pay interest. This doesn't make sense. And you're like, right, it doesn't make sense for you because you don't, you know, you make so much money. You don't need to have something just figure out how much you can save on its own.
Right. That's funny because what you're saying by the plus feature is that you're rewarding, again, behavior, right?
I mean, right.
Instead of rewarding interest, you're helping people create these behaviors that they're going to use their entire lifetime. What's the average age of a Digit user?
27 today.
That's powerful. That's cool. People just get it at digit.com, right? Is it digit.com?
Digit.co, digit.co.
Digit.co.
And but if you Google Digit, you can get there very easily that way as well.
Which is funny because that's the way that I did it. And by the way, we'll have a link on the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Hey, I got one more question for you while we have you here. What's your number one piece of savings advice for young people? Now that you're the big 3-0, dude, you got to talk to those 25-year-old young kids. What do you tell them?
I think it still goes back to what we talked about in the beginning of this episode, and it's really thinking about your earnings power. What do you do for work, and how much will it make over the course of your life if you graduate through your profession? And then if you have that figured out, then I think sorting things in order of, you know, do you have a student loan? Pay it down. You know, do you have credit card debt? Pay it down. Getting the liabilities off your balance sheet, then you can start thinking about saving for the long term. But people very quickly forget they even have these student loans and they start saving, which mentally feels good, but on paper is a bad financial decision. Get out of debt, then start saving.
What's up, Milwaukee? It's Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I know you're not all in Milwaukee. Well, but most of you are, but I just always really wanted to say that. Today's trivia is getting all literary. Ready? In 1826, Benjamin Disraeli wrote the classic Vivian Gray. In it, he talked about something financial that had never been referenced in literature before. What was it? I'll be back in a minute after I figure out what exactly OG is doing over there in the corner.
Time for a quick timeout to pay the bills. And speaking of paying bills, the centerpiece of your entire bill paying and home operating budget is your checking account, isn't it? So why not have a good one? StackingBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney can help you quickly compare checking, savings, and credit card options. Magnify Money. How'd they come up with that name? CEO Nick Clemens shares the story.
Well, I spent years working in banking, and every time we wanted to find a way to make a little bit more money, we would get some lawyers in the room, we would add some extra fine print, and that fine print would help us charge more money. And so what we wanted to do at Magnify Money is we wanted to be the magnifying glass to help go through the fine print, find the traps, and make it really easy for people to avoid them and to spend less money on banking.
Head to StackingBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. The magnifying glass that saves people on average $450. We're also happy to be sponsored by SoFi. Find them at StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. We've told you before, we tell you all the time about their low rates and flexible terms for student loans, personal loans, and mortgages. But we asked co-founder Dan Macklin how easy it is to apply. How easy is it, Dan?
It's really easy. You go to SoFi.com and apply. It takes about 10 minutes. We ask for a few pieces of information. And then we will approve you or not approve you instantly in the vast majority of cases. So within 10 minutes, you'll know if you have a rate, what that rate is, and we'll show you calculations as to how much money you can save. So that's extremely quick and simple.
That takes a lot of hamsters to spin that wheel, Dan.
Yeah, we do a soft credit pull. We're running your credit in the background. But assuming that everything matches up, then it really is a 10-minute process. for you, and then it's an instantaneous approval decision for the majority of folks.
Let's find out right now how much lower your interest rates can be. Head to stackybenjamins.com/SoFi. That's SOFI.
Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, back, and I still can't figure out what OG's into. He's got this tin foil and rubber bands and an empty cereal box, and he just keeps yelling, "Come in, Cleveland!" But he's not really talking to anybody in particular. I don't think I want to know, so let's just focus on trivia. The question was, what term did Benjamin Disraeli use in Vivian Gray that had never been referenced before? The answer? Millionaire. He was the first to reference a millionaire anywhere in literature. Man, can you think of how much money that was back then? And when eggs were like a penny a piece. It boggles the mind, that one. Speaking of boggle, Joe's mom's waiting upstairs for me to play some boggle. See ya.
Thanks to Ethan for coming down to the basement. Hey, we get letters, OG. We've got some great notes. First one comes from Tony. Tony says, thanks for the entertaining show. On the podcast that he just listened to, he found out that a traditional IRA is not a tax deduction when there's an employer-provided investment retirement option. By the way, let's make sure that people are clear. That's not always true. It depends on how much income you make, right, OG?
Correct.
So if you're somebody that's under a certain income threshold, you can deduct a traditional IRA and have, let's say, a 401k. That's for United States-based listeners. But he said the Uncle Sam guy is really cramping his style, and he's hoping we can help with his situation. His wife and he, they're 31 and 29, just moved to Northern California, taking new jobs that offer 401k plans and making just over $200,000 combined. They're, of course, I'm in Texarkana. Making $200,000 combined is fantastic. Her employer matches her 401k up to 3%. Yay. He says, while his only matches 25% of the first 4%. He says, boo. But you know what? The fact that they match anything, OG, is a great thing.
Free money.
I like the 100% of 3%, but I'll tell you, matching anything is fantastic. We're currently contributing 8% into these 401ks and maxing out the traditional IRAs that they previously had. Now, knowing that they aren't going to get the tax deduction on the IRAs, one, what's an option to invest the allocated IRA money other than their 401ks? And two, what should they do with the money currently in their IRAs? The reason we've decided not to take the extra money allocated to the IRA and put it in the 401k is because they're looking for something with more options than what our limited 401k options are. Thank you from Tony. Thanks for the note, Tony. Well, the first thing is all this, I think, OG, is predicated on the plan. And we talked a little bit about this on Monday. But not knowing what Tony's goals are, the goals are going to kind of drive, not the investments. He says that his 401ks have limited investment options. I don't think the investment options drive where to invest as much as when you're going to need the money drives when to invest. Am I wrong?
Well, yeah, that has a lot to do with it, obviously, by virtue of him trying to decide between 401ks and other retirement type accounts. I'm just going to assume that this is retirement type
money. That is still retirement money, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, Roth IRA. Why wouldn't we do a Roth IRA? Income limit on a Roth this year is $183,000. Adjusted gross. It's modified adjusted gross income. Okay, fine. But with $200,000 of income, you're going to have some deductions in there. You got state income tax deduction, maybe
right
on the house.
The 401ks are pre-tax, so those aren't going to count. 401ks
are pre-tax. So you might get to that 183 adjusted gross income number or below it to be able to contribute, and then you get a phase in for the next 10,000. So anywhere between 183 and 193 of AGI or MAGI, I guess, that's where I would go. I'd go with Roth. So that'd be part one of the question. I guess the other part of the question is, what do I do with the money that I've already contributed? You need to take it out because, well, you don't have to. I would take it out. And here's the reason why, because it's going to be considered a non-deductible IRA contribution for this year.
You're talking about the money he contributed this year. Yes.
Yeah, into his IRA.
Right.
You don't have to take it out, but here's the problem with it. The problem becomes you now don't get a tax deduction on that money, which technically means that that money returns to you tax-free. But to get that tax-free nature of that contribution, you have to keep track of it for the rest of your life. Young guy, young gal, married couple, do you really want to be keeping track of on a tax form and in your personal records for the next 60 years, this $5,000 contribution, right, and then prorate your IRA distribution in 2045. Oh, but only 91% of this is pre-tax money. So I'm going to take out the contributions as an excess contribution removal. You'll have to pay income taxes on what that's gained. Similar to our question from last week, I think, about the Roth IRA. You'll have to pay income taxes on what it's gained. Your custodian, the place where the money is, will figure this all out for you. Just call them or go online. They will send you a check. And then you can put that money right back into your Roth if you want, which is what I would do.
Yeah. And when you go to open a Roth, I would open one that works with a lot of different companies. Yeah,
do it at a big, you know,
like a brokerage house. Yes. And a lot of them have free trades in and out of different ETFs or big mutual fund families. Check out their selection. One that's having a deal right now, if you go to stackingbenjamins.com/TradeKing, you'll get some free money as long as you put $3,000 in. So you can use that link. Or check out TD Ameritrade, any of the big houses, Scottrade, you name it. They all have their Fidelity, whoever. All right. That's question number one. Thanks for the question, Tony. Next one comes from Jill. Very similar question from Jill OG. Jill's going to be changing jobs soon, has a question for us on what to do with her simple IRA. She's got about $7,500 socked away in a T. Rowe Price simple IRA through her current employer, and she doesn't know what to do with it once she leaves her job December 31st. She heard some advice recently on the show and thought that it's good to have some retirement funds in a 401k/simple IRA pre-tax style fund and some in a Roth because they're treated differently tax-wise once you start making withdrawals after retirement. So her question is, should she roll this over to a Roth, thinking about maybe Vanguard, or leave it where it's at? Or if she's offered a new simple or 401k with her new gig, should she move it there? What do we think? First thing I would not do, I would not move it there.
Yes. So first things first, with a simple IRA, if you haven't been at your employer for 2 years, you can't move it into another thing other than another simple IRA. So it has to be there for 2 years. If you've been at your employer for more than 2 years, then you're good to go. You can move it into an IRA, what's called a trustee-to-trustee transfer. People call that a rollover. Roll it over to an IRA. And then if you wanted to convert it to a Roth, you could, but you're going to pay taxes on that.
Right. So make sure you got enough money in your emergency fund to cover that tax.
Yeah. So you're going to know, hey, if you take $7,500, if you roll it to an IRA, convert it to a Roth, that's going to turn into a taxable event for you. And then you'll have to pay taxes. Now, this is next year. So 2016, the tax bill will be due April of 2017. So you got some time to kind of plan for it if that's the case. But so I would definitely roll it over to an IRA. I don't know that I would put it into a Roth, depend on your tax situation and other things. But I'm with Joe. I would not put it into the new plan, regardless of what it is.
Yeah. And the general rule for that is because once you put that money in the new plan, that plan is at the whim of your employer. So if your employer decides to change the allocation, change the things that you have inside, they can change that. So if you're investing in, let's say, X fund, and maybe there's 20 different funds and they decide to go with a plan that only has four. And I realize that what David Ramirez said a couple of weeks ago on the show, that it's not about the number of plans, but how good they are. But let's say they decide to go cheap and have worse plans in the future. Well, you're going to have to move your plan into the new fund because your boss decided to do something with the plan. That's completely out of your control. But the cool thing is that if it's not with an employer, it's under your control. And so here's what I like doing. Take the funds that you have at work, figure out which ones are good and which ones are bad. And then allocate toward the good funds. And then in the areas of your overall allocation where you don't have good investment options, allocate the simple, this old money, allocate that into the areas that you don't have good options for in your 401k. So let's say you don't have good international funds. Well, then make your simple the international part of the portfolio. So if somebody just looks at the 401k and looks at your old simple, they'll look at both of them and go, wow, neither one of those are diversified. Well, not a big deal, because if you put them both together, then people see the diversification.
And I would also add that you'll have to remember that as well. If all of a sudden international does really, 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 really good and your other investments don't do so well, you don't get to like switch and say, I want to have all my money be right. International or the other way around, which
right.
is more like.
You also can't think, oh, my old simple's stinking. It's horrible. This is managed this is poorly. Bad. Yeah.
Especially if you're the manager.
I got to fire myself.
Myself sucks at this.
I am terrible at this. Right. Yeah. Thanks for the question, Jill. If you've got a question for us, send those to me, Joe at stackingbenjamins.com. When people leave us reviews, it is so nice. And this one's going on Mom's Fridge back from the end of October. 5 stars. Great podcast from Job HHHHHHHGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGGG absolutely nothing. That's right, Job HG. Kidding aside, Joe and OG are great hosts. They're the reason I liquidated my entire retirement savings to invest in coins and gold. Somebody learned exactly what you're not supposed to learn, OG. We say learn nothing. We mean nothing, not to invest in coins and gold. Thanks for the tip, guys. P.S. OG's book suggestion of Simple Wealth, Inevitable Wealth was a great read. So somebody's actually listening to what you like to read. You love that book.
It is a fantastic book. Don't you like it too?
I do like it. Simple Wealth, Inevitable Wealth. Good stuff. Thanks for that review. And that one's going on Mom's Fridge. If you can leave us a review wherever you listen, whether it's Stitcher, iTunes, or elsewhere, please do so because that helps us find new listeners.
I have tons of book recommendations. We should do that. We should do like a book recommendation by OG. Ooh, like a section where I have a pipe and I wear like a robe.
Don't wear the creepy robe like you did the other day.
That was awesome, dude.
It was so creepy.
And I didn't have any pants on.
That's going to do it. Like how I had the music come up right there.
Remember when I said like, hey, turn the fan on. My feet are a little cold. You couldn't understand like what was happening. I was just getting the air blown.
And you
looked so cool.
You looked all relaxed the entire,
entire
show. I just threw up a little bit in my mouth. I can't figure out why. Hey, so the big lesson today. And I think this isn't just Ethan, by the way, thanks to Ethan Block for coming down to the basement, but it's not just Ethan, but sometimes the best advice, you can't find it in a snippet. You got to kind of do a little more.
Well, yeah. And then advice of always and never, I just have a really big problem with always and never. Those things to me seem like really, really limiting belief systems, you know?
Well, and I think you should limit yourself, right? When you are...
No, this is America, dang it. We never limit ourselves.
Hear me out. I'm talking about you limit yourself, not a government limit yourself. What I mean is that you say, you know what? I can't handle credit cards, so I need an all-cash lifestyle. But like Ethan said, you know what? If you have a great budget, you know how to live a cash lifestyle, then at that point, then okay, you know? Then you're all ready for 102.
We were all cash for a long time, dipped into, I think we talked about this about a year ago, started getting into the points thing, that sort of doohickey. And to limit ourselves, I pay our credit cards every week. I don't care what we charge. I just pay them every week. And because that I can catch, if all of a sudden we start slipping into the consumerism type of thing, we can catch it a week into it. Like, whoa, hey, last week I wasn't able to pay the credit card bill fully from our exuberance from this week. So no more Dairy Queen for anybody.
That's horrible. Except me, right? That way you cut out 3/4 of the Dairy Queen.
Exactly.
Which is fine. And actually, knowing you, it's not 3/4. You cut out about half the Dairy Queen because half of it's you. 3/4 is the rest of the OG household.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm such an ice cream snob.
I love ice cream. You know what's funny is that even this time of year, I'm the guy at the Dairy Queen drive-thru going peanut butter parfait. And I can tell even when the lady comes up to the window, she's looking at me like, it's December. And I'm like, yeah, but it's ice cream. So good.
The Dairy Queen by us doesn't have chocolate.
Huh? Oh, no. Dairy Queen doesn't have chocolate. There's no chocolate at Dairy Queen.
Well, in other parts of the country, there most certainly are.
Shut up. Really? No, there's not.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I have a peanut allergy, son. So I know where all the ice cream things are. In other parts of the country where we travel from time to time, you walk in, you get a chocolate. So I walked in this Dairy Queen at near your house, right? I walk in and I'm like, hey, I'm going to get a chocolate plain, and then I'll get a chocolate with sprinkles. And the guy's looking at me and he goes, you mean vanilla with chocolate on it? And I said, no, like chocolate. And he says,
they were Dairy Queen.
Like chocolate ice cream? Like, yeah, chocolate ice cream. He's like, ah, oh, yeah, we don't have chocolate ice cream.
And he's like, looking at you like you're from the moon.
I'm looking at him like, who's your manager? What do you mean you don't have chocolate ice cream? And I said, how do you not have chocolate ice cream? He says, We tried it. It just didn't really take. Like, it didn't take. What
the hell is going on? We tried it in 56.
And then, like, the world started spinning sideways, and it was like this big mirror, all these mirrors everywhere, and I was running around into myself. No!
And then you know what he said? And then he said, chocolate ice cream. Someday we're going to land a man on the moon. That's what I got to say. Someday.
Gosh almighty, I couldn't even believe it. But apparently, by your house, they do not have chocolate.
They do not have chocolate. I'm surprised you got chocolate anywhere at Dairy Queen. That's pretty wild. And you know, that's why I'm always alone when I go to the Dairy Queen. I got to go. One is the loneliest number, according to Three Dog Night.
I mean, we literally walked out. I was like, okay, bye. And the kids were like, what? They don't have chocolate ice cream? I said, yeah. Mr. Joe's city is very backwards in a whole lot of ways.
Yeah, we're backwards.
Can we wrap this up? I'm super hungry now because it's like 20 to 12.
It's just time for ice cream. Yeah. All right, guys, on Friday, we got the Roundtable crew in here talking about everything we talked about this week. So if you're interested in either investing and saving for beginners or the 102, the not so obvious stuff, we're going to have articles about those that the gang will talk about on Friday. We'll see everybody then. Stacking Benjamins.
This show is the property of the Free Financial Advisor, LLC. Copyright 2015. This show was edited by Joe Salcihi and Isabella Bianca. Special thanks to Ethan Block from Digit. Special thanks to Joe's mom for convincing OG to lay off the ice cream. Somebody's just a little lactose intolerant. Special thanks to OG for the new homemade radio antenna. Who knew Cleveland could sound like the inside of a shoebox? The people responsible for this show have been sacked.
This segment's not for kids. By the way, also, for people that are new, I haven't done this in a long time. This segment we call dessert. What happens in dessert stays in dessert. I don't want to hear anybody talking about the after show.
It's like Fight Club.
Yeah, you do not talk about this part of the show. So if you're new, and I haven't said that several times in a row, and I just realized, I'm like, people just have no clue what this is. And we talk about whatever we want to talk about. Sometimes it's serious, most of the time it's not, but usually it has nothing to do with finance. So that's what you're hearing now, our little hidden clip. Hey, but so you talk about how weird our town is. And as I said, this segment's not for kids. So if you've got kids, listen later. All right, there's your warning. And we're not going to swear. We're just going to talk about something a little off. We first moved to Texarkana, and I'm not even here yet. And Cheryl writes to me because she got the Texarkana Gazette, the hometown newspaper, one of the first days. And she goes, oh my, you're not going to believe where we moved. And I said, what are you talking about? I mean, we visited. It's a nice town. It is a nice town. But there are some redneckish elements.
There's some banjos. And that them their hills.
There was a guy, there was a police car that came upon a pasture when we first moved here. And there was a guy who was standing behind a horse and he had a log that he had put behind the horse so he could get up close behind it. And the guy had his pants down and he was making a motion that kind of did not have anything to do with horses.
It's ridiculous. Why are you talking about
this? Dude, it was horrible. So it was gross. What was even worse was that the guy said, no, I wasn't.
Oh, bestie, she don't mind.
Well, the guy denied it. He said, no, I wasn't doing anything. They're like, why were your pants down? This is all in the paper. Why were your pants down? My pants just fell down. I have no idea. Like, he said he was completely innocent. So I thought, because now we've been here 7 years, that that was a one-time incident.
Until you came upon a horse and you were like, so
looking
I see
good.
What this guy has.
When in Rome.
So anyway, me and my buddies were out in the pasture, dude, and he says, you ever?
It happened ever, again last ever? Week. It was in the paper again last
same,
week.
Same dude or
what's that?
Same dude.
Different dude, different horse. So, apparently we got a bunch of good looking horses around here. Not just one.
Understand the beginning part of that story. A police car was in the pasture.
No, police car's driving down the road. Dude looks over and here in the pasture's a dude with his pants down behind a horse. And it's they're like, that's private property.
Sure is. Mind your own business. That's what I would say. Be like, dude, the line's back there.
My stomach. I'm
three-way. Never done this before.
Nay.
Let's see what old Bessie's up to.
Thank goodness the guy's here with the handcuffs. We could call them hoof cuffs. This is so bad. This is so disgusting. Anyway, I thought I'd share that because, and what's bad is that I'm on like these, I take part like everybody should in community events and stuff. And I'm in this group called Leadership Texarkana.
You're like a community organizer.
Well, I represent a nonprofit group building trails, like walking trails around town, just beautifying the city and giving people nice open spaces. And we've got some,
sorry, what was that?
No, but we've got some really nice trails around town. So I'm in this group, Leadership Texarkana, and they're talking about, you know, when they try to bring companies here, like what people look at, I'm like, oh, I know. They ask about, like, you know, green spaces and parks and whatever. They ask about that. And then the head of the Chamber of Commerce goes, yeah, and you know what else they do? The bigger companies ask to see the headlines from the last 12 months. So like, because you can fill them full of all kinds of stuff, but they go, nope, show me the headline of every paper for the last 12 months. And they put somebody in a back room and they look at all the headlines. And he's like, as long as that stuff continues,
you have to beep out my,
Oh yeah. All right. So anyway, you got first world problems.
Well, it's not quite as bad as yours. I mean,
no, you want to save yours for the green room?
Yeah, I don't care. Sure.
Yeah. All right, everybody. See you later, Stacking Benjamins.